This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, I feel like yesterday was a fateful day in the history of what the war and the history of the State of Israel. And I'd like to start with a direct quote from the Chief of General Staff, Eyal Zamir, who yesterday was in the Israeli Air Force Command Center bunker and was marshalling the operation that took place yesterday against Hamas leaders in Qatar. And the planes were in the air, and they requested his approval to go ahead with the operation. And he said the following. He said, "These are the terrorists whose entire aspiration was to be the spearhead for the destruction of the State of Israel. We will continue to carry out our mission everywhere, at every range, near and far, in order to hold our enemies accountable. Authorized, proceed. Eliminate the heads of the Hamas terror organization. We are settling a moral and ethical account on behalf of all of the victims of October the 7th. We will not rest and we will not be silent until we bring back our hostages and defeat Hamas." The words of Eyal Zamir yesterday to authorize the operation.
Incredible. Absolutely. It's memorable, and there's no doubt that that'll become part of a part of our lexicon. Let's talk about the what did happen yesterday. What do we know?
Well, we know that an incredible operation, audacious, I think, chutzpah comes to mind. I mean, it's one of the for me, the operation that was carried out yesterday is up there with the pager attacks. It's kind of in that league and of that level. We understand that the squadron that flew to Qatar yesterday comprised 10 to 15 fighter jets. We understand that there was refueling along the way to allow them to reach their destination in Qatar, and that they simply attacked sites that were housing the Hamas senior leadership in Qatar. What we know is that there were a number of explosions, potentially 10 to 15 ordnances, bombs that were dropped around the area of Doha in Qatar, Doha, the capital of Qatar, and that all planes returned safely to base back in Israel. And according to the assessment that was given by the IDF yesterday of the mission, they believe that the mission succeeded in achieving its objectives. Now, what we know is that many of Qatar's political leadership, sorry, many of Hamas's political leadership were being housed in Qatar. They have been for a number of years already, since they were expelled from Syria quite a number of years ago. They've set up base in Qatar, and it's from there that they've been marshalling and controlling not only the war, the attacks that took place on October the 7th, the subsequent war in Gaza, but perhaps more importantly than all of that, the negotiations for the release of our hostages. And there are so many discussion points here that we could raise. And I would encourage listeners, if they have a question, specific questions that they wish to ask to fire them in and to let us know which direction you're thinking. Because as I say, there's so many discussion points and unfortunately, we're not going to be able to cover all of the points that are relevant. And I'm guessing that we're going to be speaking about this operation for some time. What we do know is that Hamas have said five people were killed. The five people who were killed were all people who were related to the current serving leader of Hamas. He's kind of given the term temporary leader, but he's certainly the leader of Hamas. So his members of his family and indeed members of his bureau, his office, were apparently killed, according to what Hamas is officially saying. Having said that, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, because it seems to be inconceivable that so many people who are so closely related to him, and I'm talking about Khalil al-Khaya, so many people who were closely related to him could have been killed, and yet he somehow was spared. So we understand that people, that his son was killed, that the manager of his bureau, that some of his escorts, the people who were supposedly people who surrounded him all the time, those names have officially been announced by Hamas as people who have been killed in this operation. But he himself, Khalil al-Haya, they are not acknowledging to have been killed, or at least not yet. Equally so, Khalid Mashal, who we know was a long time operator terrorist against Israel, and who survived a previous assassination attempt that was mounted by Israel in Jordan many, many years ago. That's a story unto itself, and we potentially would tell that one day, how his life was saved by King Hussein of Jordan. But this time around, I'm not so sure that he was lucky enough to get away. But as I say, the Hamas side of the story are denying that members of their negotiating team have been killed or that any of their leaders have been killed. But they have acknowledged that these five people who surrounded Khalil al-Haya, they were killed. Israel is saying that all of those who were targeted were reached and were killed, although we're still waiting to get, let's say, eyewitness accounts and confirmation of that. But if I was to believe one of the two stories, I would certainly believe the Israeli story, because as we've seen over many, many months and through many incidents, Israel has said we were successful when we managed to get Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, and there were denials, and for many even days and weeks, there was no confirmation and people coming out saying he wasn't killed. But finally, the reality was undeniable, and they had to come out acknowledging that he'd been killed. And the same was true with Sinwar and for many, many other of the leaders of Hamas and Hezbollah, where they denied their leaders had been reached. And yet, ultimately, the inevitable became known. And so on this occasion, if I was believing anybody's account of the story, I would suggest that I would believe Israel's account. But we will see. I mean, time will tell as to exactly how successful the operation was. But there's no doubt that it was audacious. There's no doubt that it is fateful in terms of changing the direction of this war.
That's what I wanted to really ask you. Is there any sense of where the war goes from this point onwards? Because this is a shift. This is a paradigm shift.
Undoubtedly a shift. And, you know, the I think that what precipitated the attack, I believe that this attack had been plotted already for many months and even maybe even longer than that. And the question was all about the timing. There are people who said, well, it was really a response to the terror attack that took place in Jerusalem the day before yesterday.
A few people are asking that question. I can see from listeners, they're asking that question. Was it linked to the terror attack from the day before?
I don't think it was directly linked as such. I mean, one might argue that the timing was just linked and they said, right, you know, we've had this plan ready already for many weeks or many months. We're just deciding when we want to push the button to make it happen. And the terror attack may well have precipitated the timing. But I am a little skeptical because it's only really since the attack in Doha took place that Hamas have come out saying, oh, we were responsible for the terror attack in Jerusalem. So it wasn't all that obvious that Hamas were really involved in a terror attack. I'm not sure that the two events can really be linked, but I think it was, let's say, a certain coincidence of timing, or maybe even a certain comfort of timing that the Doha attack took place immediately after that terror attack where civilians were killed in Jerusalem. I'm not sure how linked together they really are, but certainly it's let's say, you know, in inverted commas, convenient to be able to carry out an attack in Doha of this magnitude in response to a terror attack that takes place in Jerusalem. It almost seems like there's a certain revenge element involved for that attack. But I think that this had been coming to the leaders of Hamas already for many weeks and months, and it was just a matter of when the button would be pushed.
There's also, despite what I believe is theater, the American condemnation, or the American, I wouldn't say condemnation, but reprimand. There seems to me little doubt that the planes had to fly over Saudi Arabia. They had to refuel. There was, I believe, very little doubt that the Americans and many others weren't knowledgeable about this way ahead of, maybe not way ahead of time, but certainly weren't involved. What's the thinking?
So I agree that the Americans would have need to have been involved. And for me, it's not really about flying over Saudi Arabia as much as it is about the huge American airbase that actually is in Qatar. Now, the Qataris are a very, very smart people, and they've arranged this. They're a small nation with a massive, massive GDP per capita. They're in the top 10 in the world in terms of the wealth that they have on a per capita basis in Qatar. They've used that wealth extremely effectively to buy out influence, to buy out political clout. They have invested in American colleges. They have managed to recruit the US Air Force to build a massive air base in Qatar. And along with that air base comes American anti-missile systems to protect their air base and in effect protect Qatar, because Qatar itself doesn't have the military strength to be able to protect itself. And by recruiting the American air base to be on their soil, they've effectively bought in a defense system which belongs to the Americans and controlled by the Americans, but which effectively protects Qatar and the Qatari people as well. So it would be very difficult for me to see a situation where Israel would send fighter jets to attack targets in Qatar without the Americans knowing about it beforehand, because it would make the Americans in Qatar extremely nervous and potentially wanting to use their anti-missile systems against incoming Israeli planes and missiles. So I have little doubt that the Americans knew about the attack before it took place and were complicit. In other words, they didn't object to it as a minimum, right, and they may well even have actively supported it. Then the question is, to what extent did the Qataris know about this before it actually happened? And there are really two schools of thought, and it's all pure speculation because I don't know the answer to this. But the one school of thought is that the Qataris really only knew about it when the buttons were being pushed, and therefore that didn't give them enough time to warn the Hamas leadership about the attack that was about to take place. The other theory is that Qatar knew about it well ahead of time, but were actually also somewhat complicit, and because they felt that the Hamas leadership have effectively outstayed their welcome in Qatar, and this is a very useful and helpful way to resolve that particular dilemma for the Qatari government and for the Qatari people. And it's quite interesting that there have been mixed messages coming out of Qatar. On the one hand, condemnation of the attack. On the other hand, the Qatari defense minister, I think it's the defense minister, came out saying, we will continue to mediate. It's not over. This attack doesn't change any of our mediation role, still wanting to maintain their position on the world stage as much as they can. A tiny nation buying out their influence in every possible sphere. And even though this attack has taken place on Qatari soil, and by the way, just as an aside, a completely irrelevant fact, but an interesting one nonetheless, that this is the first time that Israel has attacked the soil of a country which is not officially declared an enemy of the state since the rescue of the hostages in Uganda, in Entebbe, all those years ago, back in the 1970s. So it's been approximately 50 years since Israel last carried out an attack on the soil of a country that is not an officially an enemy of the state. But having done all of that, the Qataris were very eager to come out and say, oh, we still want to continue to mediate. We still want to be part of whatever is going on in the world stage. So it makes me wonder whether the Qataris didn't really know about it before it happened and they just allowed it to go ahead without warning the Hamas leadership and without saying a word. They just said, you know, they said nothing effectively. They didn't say yes and they didn't say no. But the most important thing is that they didn't say no.
Yeah, it's I don't know, it's just incredible to see, to zoom out a little bit and to watch this play out is truly, truly remarkable. No doubt when we chat tomorrow, there'll be more news and more updates on this. And I already look forward to chatting to you then. Anthony Wright will be back with us tomorrow morning at 7:45 for the Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.